Phil Corbett here. If this is your first time listening to The Wind, don't start here. Go down to the very bottom of the feed and start with the prologue. Or if you're not one for formal introductions, you can start with whichever full episode calls to you. For the rest of you, this is something totally different. I figure during the off-season, I'm going to publish some interviews uploaded as bonus episodes. Totally different sound and format than the regular show. This is a short conversation I had with Jessica Bruder. She's the author of Nomadland, which is a great book that was recently turned into a great film, starring Frances McDormand. I saw Jessica speak in 2019 at Sundance Books in Reno, Nevada, and this phone call happened just pre-COVID in February 2020.
My name is Jessica Bruder, and I'm the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. More and more around the country, we're seeing cities and towns making it illegal for people to sleep in their vehicles. Even places like Walmart, where that kind of boondocking used to be tolerated, have been cracking down. And it's really sad to me what that says about our culture, and that if you can park your car somewhere and that's okay, but it's not okay if you're sleeping in it, to me, that's a real indictment of our culture. It says that we privilege property over people, and it's a pretty ugly place to be.
Yeah, and I thought the chapter in Nomadland, the H word, was really interesting. When you came and spoke at Sundance in Reno, my dad was there, and at the time he was living in a RV in his friend's backyard, and he walked in and heard you talking about homelessness and talking about these homeless issues, and then the way you laid it out of like, yeah, well, some of these people are living outside, some are living in these converted cars, others are living in RVs in their friend's backyard, and I just like caught eye contact with him. And when I talked to him later, he was like, man, yeah, that's so weird. Like, until that moment, I was thinking of this other.
Sure. And for a lot of people, you know, sleeping on somebody's couch, like Linda May in the book was sleeping on a couch at her kid's place, but she didn't want to be a burden on them. And that's one of the reasons she hit the road. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I think in a country where the social safety net is so thin and porous, a lot of people don't spend, you know, try not to think about it. But the fact that homeless as a word has come to imply this caste system, and kind of everybody has a way not to be it.
Yeah.
Which is understandable because of the stigma. A lot of people I met refer to themselves as houseless rather than homeless. And I respected that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, during the, you know, the reporting for this whole book, first of all, how long was the reporting? And then second of all, like, can you kind of talk about that blurring of lines, how you were basically reporting from the very blurred edge in between?
Yeah. So basically, I worked on Nomadland for about 3 years, if you include the Harper's Magazine cover that was the genesis of the book. So that was before I had a camper van. I was out there in a tent meeting people who were the engine of the magazine story and then the book. And a lot of the people I met basically felt like they'd lost at a rigged game, between the fact that, you know, federal minimum wage has been stalled at $7.25 for, you know, God, coming up on a decade now, more. Time has passed since I last pulled that stat. It's the cost of housing keeps going up. If you look at CEO to worker pay, now it's like 271 to 1. It was 20 to 1 in 1965. You know, things are pretty crazy. There's a pretty big economic chasm going on out there. And for a lot of people who thought that they would have what used to be considered a normal retirement, Social Security has come up short. We've seen pensions turn into 401ks, which are much riskier. We've seen that a medical emergency can really wipe somebody out, divorce, all sorts of things. So a lot of people who didn't really plan on being on the road in their later years were the kind of people I was meeting out there. And for a lot of them, you know, it was this weird double-edged thing, because being out there and finding community felt like freedom and hope, as opposed to being stuck on the work till you die treadmill and, you know, continue to go into debt and not make your rent. But also it was just an existence that was precarious and didn't have a lot of, you know, things are great until they're not. Things are great until you break an axle and then you are capital H homeless instead of houseless. So they were in this kind of, a lot of people were in this kind of liminal space where they were okay in the moment, but, you know, one emergency away from a pretty bad situation.
Yeah. And I mean, that there's even blurred lines in that with, you know, there are people like you write in the book that are, you know, living out of their van, living out of a trailer, but are working the work till you die kind of thing, working at Amazon, working at these big warehouses, picking fruit. So there, that line is a lot blurrier than people think.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of people who, you know, are going out there earning a paycheck, and in, you know, you wouldn't, they look, you know, perfectly middle class when they're out interacting in the world, and you wouldn't suspect some of the financial challenges that they've been facing. And you also have some of the old school RVers, who are kind of the last of the great pensioners, who are out there kind of just doing the mom and pop tour America too. But it's interesting, because you do see a lot of social stratification between those more well-off people and people who just got on the road. I mean, I remember when I was interviewing Swanky Wheels in the book, she was at a campfire with a whole bunch of people in really nice RVs. And when they asked her what she lived in, and she pointed to her rig, which was the van, they actually got up and left their own campfire.
Wow.
And that's really sad to me.
Yeah. And I mean, you spoke about that in the book, the like camping in a tent in the beginning kind of set you in a different, you know, strata, and that there is sort of. Can you explain
which I didn't,
that breakdown?
Which I absolutely didn't mean. It's funny. I had a rental car and a tent. And I'd done some desert camping before, although I've got to tell you, it was in the 20s. It was very cold. And I never, when I was out there in the desert, I always told people, you know, I have this teaching gig and I live in an apartment back east. But somehow I think the fact that I was in a tent just kind of, even though I was utterly forthright with people, there is this, you know, hierarchy where you've got the people in the big, nice RVs, and then maybe the people in the beat up RVs, and then the people in the nice vans, beat up vans. And do you know what I mean? It goes all the way down, and tent is kind of at the bottom. So I think a lot of people were very kind and, you know, tried to adopt me. The shelter offered me blankets. I had enough blankets. I couldn't, they were so insistent that I think I just turned around and donated them to somebody else. But yeah, I didn't even realize that I was stepping into this hierarchy. Absolutely. The reason, I mean, I was in a tent and I think I was 500 feet from a vault toilet. And when I got the book advance, I got a van. And part of that was just so legally, I didn't have to be next to a vault toilet. I mean, there are ways to work around it. But then I really only knew the rules of the park system and didn't want to run afoul of the rangers. So
when we think of America, when we think of the West, we often think about, you know, like these figures that are roaming and free and able to just kind of like be out in the world and exist. And we have all of these laws that specifically ban that.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is ostensibly public space. We see all sorts of, you know, unhoused living being criminalized too. People more and more getting thrown off benches, and, you know, the obvious question being, where are people supposed to go? Yeah, and it's ugly. And I think people lose sight of it. I don't know if you read this story, but a story that put this into slightly comic relief for me was a while back, there was, I believe, a shelter for animals in San Francisco. that had hired, that basically got one of these roving robots with an eye on it to disrupt camping on the sidewalk in tent cities. And I think the people who had been living on the sidewalk actually wrecked it and put barbecue sauce on the sensor, which I thought was kind of hilarious.
That is really funny.
But in my mind, the kind of social myopia it takes to run a shelter for animals and then to treat humans that way. I mean, maybe that's only in San Francisco of this era. Do you know what I mean? It's not definitely not the hippie San Francisco of yore. It just seems like a very Silicon Valley thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little dystopian.
And so I know a couple people asked like about solutions when you were in mm-hmm. Reno. Can you maybe bring up a couple of the solutions you brought up there? I think you mentioned, parking, basically places where people can be houseless legally.
Yeah, there are safe parking zones. I believe there are some in LA and some in San Diego, and they've run into challenges where people are kind of doing the NIMBY not in my backyard thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that I'm hoping that model will take off more because I think it's humane and it's important. Because obviously we need more affordable housing. And I know LA in particular is trying to put a bigger focus on that now, but it's not coming fast enough. For some people, if the vehicle is the only shelter they have, I think you want to enable them to keep at least that modicum of stability. There's something neat that came out after the book came out. It's called the Homes on Wheels Alliance, which is actually run by a gentleman in the book, Bob Wells, who started the Rubber Tramp Rendezvous.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually, it's tailor-made to help nomads in need. So that's another thing on my radar that's pretty neat. But I think a lot of the solutions right now are small, grassroots, and local. And I think, the big systemic issues have to do with Social Security and the minimum wage and affordable housing. These huge problems that are important, but that I'm hoping people will think about.
All right. That'll do it. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, Phil. No problem. My pleasure.
Jessica Bruder speaking with me in February 2020. She is the author of the book Nomadland, which is available wherever you buy books, and it was recently made into a film of the same name, which you can stream now on Hulu. I signed up for the free trial solely for this movie, and you can too. Probably more bonus episodes soon, during the off season while I work on year 2. If you like the show, make sure to rate and review on iTunes and to tell a friend. Thank you for being here, and remember to keep listening.